It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Spring is here, nesting season is upon us, and wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today to talk about nests of all kinds. And Jim, you just returned to your nest from a month away, right?
Yes, I did. In fact, that's why we weren't on last month, of course. My wife and I had this trip of a lifetime to Africa. We went to the countries of Kenya and Tanzania and on safari there and got to see some amazing things, everything we'd hoped to and more. And we'll talk about that on a future program when I have time to sort through the, between the two of us, we have something like 17,000 photos to go through.
So it's going to take the next month to actually look at all the pictures that you took.
Yeah, it will. and sort out just a few to be able to put on the IPR website so that we can, listeners, next month when we have the program talking about the trip, we'll be able to see some photos.
Terrific. Well, I can't wait.
Oh, it'll be
fun. So get to work on that, Jim.
Okay, I will.
All right, but even on your trip, you saw some nesting behavior, right?
Oh, yes. Of course, being near, near the equator, Kenya and Tanzania, are essentially tropical or subtropical countries, and there's nesting going on all year round. One of the things, though, that is very prominent on the landscape in these terrific savannas and grasslands of Kenya and Tanzania are these nests that hang from the wonderful acacia trees. That was just acacia, didn't know what they were. Sorry.
A whole continent of new puns for you, huh?
Yes, there is, actually. So these nests hang from the acacia trees, and sometimes they're single nests, but more often there are five or six or a dozen nests hanging from the same tree. And sometimes there are huge nests hanging from these trees. And they're all made by a family of birds called weaver birds. We don't have them here. We certainly have birds that weave some nests, and we'll talk about those a little later. But the weaver birds were quite common and quite prominent on the landscape throughout Africa. So it led me to think about doing this program about nesting, because it is a natural behavior that crosses all continents around the world, and something that really everybody does in some way, including humans. I don't think of my behavior sometimes, unless I actually put some thought into it. Gee, I don't have nesting behavior. Usually that's attributed to pregnant women, right? They have nesting behavior. But I think that that's wrong. I think that men have nesting behavior too, just perhaps in slightly different ways. And I was thinking about this when I'm on a canoe trip. One of the things that I find a camping spot, I like to get in that camping spot, get the tent set up, build a fire, brew some coffee, and it makes me feel sort of settled, like I've kind of made that place my own. And that's a form of nesting behavior. There's no question about it. And it's how you make that place your own and makes you feel at home.
When we think about man caves,
right,
that
exactly.
Sounds like nesting behavior.
Exactly. I don't have one of those. but yeah, a lot of men do. That's absolutely nesting behavior. There's no question. So and there are lots of, some people think about, oh, well, that's when you clean up your nest and that sort of thing. But I think that's only part of it. I think we have to look beyond that in human behavior.
Absolutely. Although I think that, this is nesting season.
Right.
And of course, you mentioned pregnant women, and I definitely experienced that as the baby
Did you really?
Was, oh, yeah. The imminent arrival, there was a lot of tidying and cleaning, and things that I normally don't like to do seemed really, really important. But so many of us do spring cleaning every year, and that seems like a sort of nesting behavior, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. In fact, perhaps my cleaning of the windows each spring, washing of the windows on our house, maybe that's nesting behavior, too. I hadn't thought about that.
Well, and of course, we all live in houses or apartments or structures of some kind. So, I mean, that's a nest as well. But let's talk about other mammals who don't have opposable thumbs and the kinds of nests that they make.
Oh, there are all kinds of nests that mammals make, and some more formal, perhaps, than others. Let's think about common mammals in Iowa. Foxes, for example, may have actually several nests. There is, I think about foxes I've tracked around campus here. They often have two or three nest sites. These may be holes that were dug originally by woodchucks or groundhogs, or by some other animal that they have exploited, the foxes have exploited and taken over, or perhaps they dig them themselves. But they'll often have their young in one nest, and once the young are able to move around at all, they will often switch sites and do that frequently every few days. And I'm not sure if it's to avoid predation or avoid detection, or perhaps it's in response to a food supply issue, so that they're closer to the food supply that they can gather for the young. But they certainly move them around, and the nests are holes in the ground, and maybe lined with a little bit of fur from the female's belly when she is. When the young are quite young and still with their eyes closed, but not much else, and it's really just sort of in the ground. Coyotes do a similar sort of thing. They have a nest or two that they will move the young around to, and again they're in the ground. And there certainly are a lot of mammals that have nests in trees. Raccoons and squirrels both nest in the trees. In fact, the squirrels are probably having, let's see, this is the end of March. We're very close. They probably have, many squirrels in parts of the state have young in the nest already or soon will. Those nests are natural holes in the trees, or holes that they've taken over from woodpeckers. That woodpeckers, which are primary hole nesters, they've carved them out of a living tree, or a dead tree, and the squirrels have taken them over. Raccoons will do a similar thing, and it's always fun as I paddled along Iowa rivers. Paddling solo, you can be very, very quiet. And as I paddle close to shore sometimes, and I look up at some of those great big silver maples that are overhanging the river, or cottonwoods that are hollowed out, and I'll see a pair of eyes looking out of raccoons that clearly are being raised in that hollow tree.
Just watching you go by. You know, when we have babies as mammals, of course, we spend a lot of time cleaning our children and changing diapers.
Right.
And thinking about a mama fox in a dirt den with maybe 2 to 6 kits down there.
Yeah, right.
You would think that things could get pretty messy, but they don't get as messy as you would imagine. How do most mammals manage waste?
Well, they clean it out as they get older, but when they're quite young, the female will actually stimulate their defecation or urination by licking the young, and actually she takes it out in her mouth. And but as they get older, then that is simply removed from the den site, often by the female. Sometimes it's covered up by dirt, but more often is cleaned up. You know, that may be another thing that stimulates their move, as a matter of fact. I hadn't thought about that. Maybe that she says, well, it's time to move to another den. This one's getting a little musty. But that's such an
important thing for people to know, because obviously you should not try to make a wild animal a pet. But a lot of people who do try that, in spite of the fact that it's against the law and it's a bad idea on a lot of fronts, don't know that the baby mammals can't go to the bathroom on their own.
That's right. Yeah, they have to be licked, and the female has to, usually it's a female has to do that in the process of raising them. So yeah, it's not something that is easy to do in captivity with a baby young one like that. You probably experienced
yes.
that.
Huh? lots of experience on that front.
Yes,
so
yes.
With the nesting behavior of these mammals, is it something that they primarily do just when they have young?
You know, it is. Although certainly foxes and coyotes, raccoons and squirrels, they all live in holes. So the nest becomes a winter den site as well. I'm thinking now, for example, that the snow is gone. Probably lots of people have discovered in their lawns these sort of tunnels that were made from the grass. And you say, oh my gosh, I've got this terrible problem. What could it be? And they're made by a small mouse called a vole, V-O-L-E. And often there is a place that might be 8 to 12 inches across where there's actually a nest in there. And these are winter nests and winter tunnels of the vole that are made underneath the snow. And it's really not a problem at all, because once the and they're made by the thatch, using the thatch from the previous year's dead grass, and they're often near your bird feeders, because they're taking advantage of spilled bird feed that is on the ground, and they'll build nests and tunnels near there to eat that. But it's not a problem, because once you start mowing, the voles have to retreat to other areas off your lawn, and the grass will grow back very quickly.
Your lawn will recover.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about different kinds of nests and nesting behavior. And now, right now, in the thick of the nesting season, we want to hear your observations as well and your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today, and we are talking about nests of all kinds. You are welcome to join the conversation with your nesting behavior observations so far this spring, or your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So we've been talking about mammal nests so far. Let's talk about another kind of creature that we don't necessarily think of with regard to nests. Let's talk about reptiles.
Reptiles are egg layers, and so they have to put their eggs in a place where they are going to hatch pretty much on their own. The reptiles in Iowa do not tend their nests in any way, although there are some pretty ancient reptiles that do. Crocodiles, alligators to some extent, and caimans to some extent also. But those aren't Iowa reptiles, of course. But they do tend their nests and tend to have some care for the young, a little bit different than other reptiles. It leads us, of course, to speculation about whether dinosaurs tended their nests or not, and all kinds of Jurassic Park sorts of filming that took place as a result. But Iowa reptiles don't tend to tend their nests at all. They don't guard them. They don't stay near them. But they place them pretty carefully. For example, a lot of our native snakes that are egg layers, we have some that are not, such as the garter snakes and rattlesnakes are not egg layers. They are egg layers, except they're called, here's a great word for you, Charity. You can use this at the next party. It's ovoviviparous.
Okay, let me write that down.
Yeah, right. It means that they hold the eggs within their body until they hatch, and so the young are born live. And they will actually, the young snakes have a little sort of umbilical cord that was connected to the yolk of the egg when they come out of the mother. It's quite fun to see. So they don't have a belly button per se, but they have a place where the belly button should be. at any rate, the other snakes, things like fox snakes and almost every other species in the state, lay their eggs in places where the eggs will stay because they're sort of a leathery. They're not as hard as like a chicken egg or a bird egg. We think of them as more of a leathery sort of feel to them, and they don't want them to dehydrate, so they'll often lay them in a rotten log or in rotten leaves, that sort of thing, underneath in the leaves, so that the eggs stay moist enough but not too moist, so that they will hatch. And depending on the temperatures, of course, in those places, it may take longer than if they were warmer. Turtles, on the other hand,
Before we move on to turtles, okay. So snakes often get together in a hibernaculum to spend the winter. Would that be considered a kind of nest?
Well, sure, it would be. In fact, the people talk about a nest of snakes.
Right.
You know,
stepped into a nest of snakes. Yes,
but it's really just a hibernaculum. It's a place where they're spending the winter that has to be at or just above freezing, so that they don't freeze to death. Just above, in the 32 to 40 degree range is ideal, so that it's cooled enough where they can live off their fat reserves all winter. But as spring comes and it begins to warm, they can actually get out in the sun. And I've heard a couple of people said already that on south-facing slopes, they have had some snakes emerge already, because we have had some warm weather. So
when I spent a little bit of spring break down in Missouri, and we saw a group of five or six snakes, and I'm not very good at identifying snakes.
Sure.
They were big and black, but they were soaking up sun by hanging in a tree, which was pretty cool.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. They must have, I wonder if they had the hibernaculum in a hollow tree. That's interesting. So could be. Most often they're in rock, but wouldn't be unusual, I guess, to have them inside a hollow tree itself. Wow, that's neat. Well, the turtles, on the other hand, are also emerging now, most of them from the bottom of ponds. They've spent the winter in the mud, barely breathing, barely the heartbeat, very, very slow, so that they can live off their fat reserves and get enough oxygen from the water, and are emerging now and will at some point in the next month or two begin laying eggs. And I say the next month or two because it depends on the species when they lay their eggs. And they'll actually sometimes go quite a distance from the water to dig a hole with their back feet and lay eggs in the sand, cover them up, and then leave them behind. Some of our listeners may have seen snapping turtles doing this, but other turtles will have similar behavior. Lizards as well. We do have lizards and skinks in Iowa, and they also lay their eggs in warm, sandy spots.
All right, but they don't tend those eggs.
Right. They're not hanging around over the nest saying, okay, everybody stay away. And as a result, a lot of turtle eggs and lizard eggs get predated by egg-eating mammals, especially raccoons and skunks together actually will come and eat those eggs before they hatch or eat the young as they hatch. So they tend to lay lots of eggs so that hopefully a few will survive.
Let's talk about frogs? Because something that always amazes me is in the springtime, if we have some rains and there's a puddle,
I'll look at that puddle
and I see tadpoles and I think, how are there tadpoles in this puddle that's not even always here?
It's amazing, isn't it? And they are amazing. I haven't heard yet if anybody has heard, so maybe some of our listeners who may have heard the spring peepers, that beep, 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 in the evening, I'd sure like to hear about it. But they will be soon. If we haven't had some already, we will have some soon. Spring peepers are among the earliest of the frogs, and they'll begin laying their eggs. They lay their eggs in sort of gelatinous masses, either in the water or just above the water on leaves, and the eggs fall off, or the tadpoles fall off into the water. And sometimes, as you mentioned, those pools will dry up before the tads, before the eggs even have a chance to hatch, especially in a dry spring. But it's amazing because sometimes those eggs, for some species, those eggs will stay in that form and they're able to maintain enough moisture so that they don't dry out completely, and they will be there maybe for a year or two sometimes, and then hatch when the rains come very, very quickly. So it is incredible how they can sort of go into this state of suspended animation. But not all do that. Many of them lay eggs right in the water or right above it, and the tadpoles hatch immediately, drop into the water or hatch out in the water, and spend their lives eating first tiny crustaceans, things called water fleas or daphnia in the water, and some other zooplankton and phytoplankton, and then grow up to be adult frogs. But it is incredible when you think about the nest is just this gelatinous mass, and nothing much else is necessary.
So they're playing the odds, obviously, to make sure that there are some frogs that make it for the next generation. How long, when you see one of those puddles that isn't always there, how long does the puddle have to be there for a tadpole to make it?
It depends on the species, and it depends on the temperature. Because in warm temperatures, the things that they need to eat develop more quickly. They're able to develop more quickly because they are sensitive to temperature changes. It may be a matter of just a couple of weeks before they develop legs, so it doesn't have to be there long. They're often what we call vernal pools in the middle of woodlands that are there only in the springtime, and those are really, really important for frog species and salamanders as well, because they'll lay eggs in there, and just a couple of weeks of water is all they need, and they'll develop to where they can survive as sub-adults as well.
We're talking about nests and nesting behavior this hour. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me today, and you're welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. What kind of nesting behavior have you seen so far this spring? And let's talk, we will talk about birds eventually. We've kind of been avoiding birds.
Well, that's the ones that are most common. Although the nests are not common,
right,
that's for sure.
Right, but let's talk about insects, because okay. They have such interesting nests, at least some of them, although some of them have the simplest nests possible.
Yeah, many nests are really not nests at all, but simply laying their eggs in the right place at the right time. And we think about this, sort of the example is the monarch butterfly. And if they have the right place to lay them, in this case it's on a milkweed plant, they'll lay single eggs. There may be a bunch of them on a given leaf or on a given plant, but there's one egg at a time, and those eggs then hatch out into small larvae. So they have to be attached to the plant. They can't be, if they fall off in a wind or a rainstorm or something, they're no good anymore. So they have to be attached to the plant. They're usually on the underside of a leaf, which protects them somewhat from drying out, and they hatch into this larva. Interestingly, I did find what's called the African monarch when we were in Africa, and it was indeed laying eggs on an African milkweed, which was really cool to see.
Wow.
And see that they're doing the same thing on a totally separate continent. It's a different species of monarch, but it's in the same family, and it also raises its young on milkweeds, which was pretty cool to realize when we were there. So these are, you know, typical of a lot of insects. A single egg in the right place at the right time can grow into a larva and then into to adulthood. But other nests are much more complex. And I thought about this the other day when I came back and was working my bee colonies and thinking about that colony as a nest, and it really is. It's a nest that they have produced for millennia, and probably much longer than that. Here's a nearly all female colony for one thing, and they do all these jobs within this nest to make this nest of bees able to survive the long cold winters of Iowa and other places, but they sort of work together. Even though they're doing individual jobs, they become a sort of single organism, and it functions as one large organism. Everything from being initially nursemaids that take care of the larva to queen attendants to heating and air conditioning specialists, making sure that the humidity and the temperature are just right in the hive for the development of the young, to being undertakers, well, they'll take the dead bees out of the hive, to being members of the militia, guarding the nest, to last, and they'll do this all, a few weeks later, they become the farmers, where they go out and collect the nectar and the pollen from the plants. And in some cases, produce then wax, which is a very complex organic chemical, to build the nest itself. This is amazing behavior when you think about these individual bees coming together and working as a single organism in this nesting colony. Ants do a similar sort of thing. It's really pretty amazing.
Absolutely. And we have a number of people on the line, and a lot of them have the same message to share with you. Obviously,
okay.
Being away for so long, you may have missed some of the signs of spring. Bob is on the line in Tipton. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are we doing?
Good. And you've been hearing frogs?
Yeah, for about 2 weeks at least down here
good.
In Cedar County.
All right.
And then last night, I think I might have heard a bullfrog. It was a real deeper croak. Than the other high-pitched ones.
It's pretty early for bullfrogs. I guess it's possible. Certainly, it depends on the area. There's a range of times that they'll begin to croak. But it may have been a very early. You may have a wood frog. You may have. I guess it's possible to have a bullfrog. But more than likely, one of the other frogs. It was maybe a little slow because the temperatures are cold at night now. So you're hearing spring peepers already?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great. So
mostly in the moving streams and stuff.
Uh-huh. Okay. So. That's terrific. That's terrific.
All right, Bob. Thanks a lot for your call and your update. Now, I heard spring peepers in Washington County about a week and a half ago.
Wow.
But
okay.
Then I was up in Blackhawk County over the weekend and not a sound.
Not a sound, huh?
It was right after some snow.
Yeah, well, frogs are temperature sensitive, so they're not gonna be out there when it's cold. And we've had some temps here in central Iowa below freezing for the last couple of nights, and so I haven't been hearing anything. But I will go out and listen the next couple of nights.
All right,
sure.
And we do have here's a report from central Iowa from our good friend Joe McNally at the Iowa Arboretum in Madrid. He says that the peepers and at least one bullfrog have been loud and proud in their wetlands and vernal ponds for about 2 weeks now.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, you're right. I've been gone, so I almost missed spring.
There's still a lot more of it.
I was just trying to miss mud season.
Right. Not the whole thing. Here's a question from Mary. Should I give wide berth to the area where we've seen fox raise their litter that was last spring? We did see the adults a few weeks ago, but not lately.
Well, I would certainly, not disturb the site, but certainly watching it from a respectful distance is certainly acceptable. You may be seeing, if you see the adults back on that same site, several days in a row or every other day, very likely there is a den there, and they probably have young ones inside. And until the young are old enough to kind of toddle around on their own and maybe just have their eyes open, they'll stay at that site. Very rarely, unless they're really disturbed, will foxes move their dens and move their young before they have their eyes open. So, it's okay to watch them from a distance and just be respectful of that site.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about nests and nesting behavior this hour. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me, and you are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about nests, nesting behavior, different kinds of nests that different kinds of animals build. With me, wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and you are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get into birds' nests, let's talk about fish.
Yeah.
I don't think about fish having nests.
Ah, but they do. And in fact, they don't have them now, but they will as the water temperature is warm. And it sounds like northern Iowa won't have warm waters for a little while yet. There's more snow on their way in northern Iowa. But the fish will begin to nest once water temperatures reach 60 degrees or so. And that may be a while yet in some parts of the state. If you look along the shoreline of Iowa ponds and lakes, you'll see in the shallow waters near the shore, usually from 6 inches to a foot or so deep, up to 2 feet sometimes, you'll see this sort of excavated area that's the leaves are gone, sort of a round circle from anywhere from 8 inches to 12 or 14 inches wide, and it's guarded by a male bluegill. Bluegills build these nests in shallow water. The female comes and lays eggs, anywhere from 1,000 to several thousand. The male then fertilizes them and guards that nest, keeping other predators away that want to eat those eggs. And the best, of course, is a gravelly bottom, so the eggs kind of settle down in between the pieces of gravel in the bottom. Pea gravel size is best, but he real clear all the other debris out of there. And they work at this quite heavily, and just like birds, the nicest nest is most attractive to the female. So she'll come and lay her eggs, and he fertilizes them there and guards them. He also then, in the process, oxygenates them by fanning them, moving water around them, and keeping the temperatures around those eggs just right, so that when they hatch, the young can swim away and live out their lives. But
so, could I spot these nests?
Absolutely.
How?
Well, walk along.
You have to be underwater.
Yeah. Well, you have to have some clear water.
Okay.
So it has to be in a lake or pond that isn't muddied up by carp or by cattle or anything else. You've got to have fairly clear water. Just walk along the shoreline and look for a shallow depression in the bottom, and it will be cleared of any debris in that. And it kind of looks weird because it's this round circle, maybe a foot in diameter, sometimes less, sometimes a little more. You may or may not, because your shadow as you walk along or the feel of your feet as you walk along, you may not see the actual male there guarding it, but you can be sure that that's, if you sit down and watch that, you'll see the male come back and do that. So it's quite a lot of fun.
Very cool. Well, now a lot of people want to talk about birds.
Yeah.
So let's talk about birds, and let's start with a call from Tori in Iowa City. Hi, Tori.
Yes, hello there.
Hi, what have you seen?
Well, I have, right outside of Iowa City on Highway 1, there is a Canadian goose in a tree. The tree is dead and it's broken off on top, and then, so she's about 30 feet off the ground, and she has a nest up there, and it's just kind of unusual to see a goose in a tree.
That is odd.
It is very odd. Very odd. This is highly unusual behavior. Interesting, because geese build nests on the ground, usually in grass, near water, and often right next to the water. But they are, you know, pretty eclectic in their nesting behavior. I've seen them on sandbars. I've seen them in tall grass, in short grass, in the middle of lawns. But I have, this would be the first time. I would love to have a picture of this. If you can photograph that and email it to Charity and she'll forward it on to me, that would be just great. Canada geese. There are geese that nest in, or ducks and geese that nest in trees. Wood ducks, for example, use hollows in trees. And in other parts of the country, there are tree ducks that actually nest up there. But it is unusual for a Canada goose.
Okay, and I'm a little worried about those goslings because wood ducks, they have a system for this. The babies come out of the nest, they fall into the water, and they're okay. But what about the goslings?
Well, they don't necessarily fall into water, because wood ducks will actually nest up to a mile away from water, and they're often 30, 40 feet up in a tree. And,
okay, but they're just little tiny downy things.
They
There's
are.
Nothing to them. What about those big meaty goslings?
Goslings, they'll probably fall, and like ducklings, they'll probably bounce, and they are precocial, so that they're ready to go as soon as they're out of the eggs. So it may be a rough landing at first, but they'll probably make it, depending how high up it is, I guess.
All right. Well, Tori, thank you so
much. It's weird.
I hope you can get a picture of that. That would be something to see. Certainly a mother goose who marches to the beat of a different drum. Scott is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Scott. Scott, are you there? Hi.
Yeah. Hi. So I have one of those nests or those birdhouses that you put on a window and you can see inside of it.
Oh, okay.
How I can make that more enticing. Yeah, I was wondering how I can make that more enticing to birds.
It may be that you'll need to cover the window side of it, because light from inside the house will seep in there, and they like it dark. So you may need to cover that at least temporarily until she lays her eggs and is sitting pretty tightly on it. I've not seen these work before, so it'll be interesting to see. But I would say cover it, make it dark, and peek inside without light behind you sometime to see if you can if she's setting on eggs. Again, I probably would not. I would cover it for most of the time, except when you want to peek in and see how they're doing.
Or install a light fixture on your porch that they can build a nest in, or
right,
a dill, flower pot, or
about anything else, actually.
That's funny. I mean, so often we try to build a habitat for animals, and then they don't like it. So is this one of those occasions, possibly, where we really want to bring them closer to us?
But yeah. Yeah, I think it's one of those, like I say, I haven't seen this work before, but perhaps, maybe it'll work. I think it could be a case where we're trying to do more than and they're simply not responding because it's not the best habitat for them.
So. Now, I do have friends who've built, for example, bluebird houses.
Sure.
And then they'll have a nest of bluebirds, and they go and peek in there, can take a picture yep. of the babies. Is that kind of interaction okay? That yeah. doesn't disturb them too much?
No, in fact, that's quite common with bluebirds because people who take care of bluebird nests or have a trail of bluebird houses frequently peek in, and they seem to be pretty tolerant of it. They have a way of doing it, of course. You have to be kind of quiet and move slowly enough so that they don't get too disturbed. But that's fairly common, and bluebirds seem to be tolerant of that.
And do you think that maybe Scott would have more success if he had some sort of birdhouse somewhere a little bit more private that he could maybe peek into?
I would think so, yeah. I would think you'd want to be put it out away from the house a little bit, and depending on what he's trying to attract, follow the guidelines that are available online and lots of places for the hole size and that sort of thing.
Well, good luck, Scott. And there's nothing neater than watching a clutch of baby right. birds grow up. And
right.
we have a question from Jack in Johnson County. Where in Iowa can we see trumpeter swans? Particularly, he's wondering, in southeastern Iowa, which is not your area of expertise.
Right. But they are spreading all over the state, and I would look at first at some of the large lakes in the area, anywhere from Coralville in far southeastern Iowa. I would look on Lake Odessa in Louisa County. On the Mississippi itself, some of the backwaters, you may find them. Now, in terms of nesting, I would say contact your county conservation board to see if there have been nests in that county where you can go to perhaps see some. But adults are becoming increasingly common, particularly during migration, but in various larger ponds and lakes across the state.
All right. And in Ames, you can see trumpeter swans pretty easily, at least. There have been a lot at Ada Hayden.
Right. Yeah, there have been a lot at Ada Hayden and at Sailorville and some of the larger lakes all over the central part of the state.
And if you're my age and went to Iowa State University, you got to see them up close and personal on
yes.
Lake Laverne, even though that wasn't the most successful
right.
experiment.
yeah, they like to attack students on campus.
And
they
cars,
didn't,
right.
Yeah.
All right, here's one from Mark. I was paddling down the Raccoon River just east of Boonville near Des Moines. I passed by a blue heron rookery. I'd say at least 30 to 40 large nests high up in sycamore trees. It was very, very noisy. And we've talked about these colonial nesters in
right.
the past, but what a cool sight.
Oh, it's a very cool sight. And seeing these rookeries, and herons tend to be colonial nesters, and their nests themselves are just... You look at it and you say, how does an egg stay in that nest? It's sort of like mourning dove nests, too. They throw a few sticks on a branch and lay an egg on there and expect it to stay. It's pretty amazing because these great big birds are landing on the edges of these nests or on the branch nearby and climbing in and sort of incubating that clutch of eggs. It's pretty phenomenal that they're able to, even though they're only one or two usually in the nest, how does that egg stay in there? It's pretty amazing. So
well, yeah. And I'm always amazed, obviously, thanks to the Decora Raptor Project and a lot of other people, we've gotten to really peek inside eagles' nests
oh,
and
yeah.
owls' nests in the last few years. What a wonderful use of technology. But the more I learn about these eagles' nests and these owl nests and how big they are
yeah.
and how heavy they are, I think, you know, I've tried to build a treehouse and that's really tricky, but they can build this enormous structure.
Yeah, it's a very large nest. In fact, some eagle nests have been measured up to 2 tons in size because they'll add to it each year. And if it's been there for a lot of years, in other words, you've got to have a really big tree, a big strong tree, to support this nest, because they'll add a few sticks or a few logs every year, and it gets larger and larger. And in fact, the owls and eagles are already nesting. Some of the owls, the great horned owls, are certainly have young already. We've seen on the news that eagles have already hatched in several of the nests around the U.S. where they have eagle cams on them. But there are other things that are beginning to actually think about nesting already, and their nests are pretty spectacular. We'll have woodcock back and whippoorwills. Their nest is pretty simple. They have a little hollow spot in the leaves where they're very well camouflaged, and lay their eggs right there on the ground in the leaves. And it's when they're sitting on eggs, it's almost impossible to see them.
On that subject, Barbara is on the line in north central Iowa with a woodcock in her backyard. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So you've actually seen a woodcock in your yard?
Yes, it scared me. I didn't know what it was. It's an American woodcock. I've never seen one before.
Aren't they cool?
Are they common to this area? They are cool.
Oh, they're the strangest looking bird. Long beak for...
They're very strange.
Reaching down into the soil to grab earthworms. Their eyeballs are up on top of their head. Now, if you're very lucky, one will dance for you. Go out and sit very quietly and listen this evening and see if you hear beep, beep. And probably tonight it may be too cold, but they may. You'll hear that. That's the male. And if you watch him, he's got his little tiny tail up and he's strutting around. And that's supposed to be very attractive to female woodcock. And the other part of the dance, he'll fly up in the air and he'll make this sound as he goes up. He'll go. His wings make this sort of light whistling noise. And as they come down, as he's breaking, you'll hear the wings make another noise and goes, and he'll land back in the same spot or very nearby. It's usually short grass like that. That's why he's on your lawn. He likes his dance to be seen. And then you hear this beep, beep. And it's supposed to be very attractive.
I hope I get to see it.
I hope so,
I'll
too.
All right. And what time of day should Barbara be looking?
Right at dusk. So let's see. When's the sun setting now? I don't know. About 7:30 or
something. Something like that. Yep.
Yeah. So right around dusk and until just after dark after the sun goes down. So.
You know, we often talk about how different cycles of the year for different kinds of animals are related to day length. And
right.
So some of the things that come in springtime will come at just about the same time every year.
Every year.
This hour, we've also talked about some things that are influenced by temperature. So this kind of stretches out our spring season this year because we seem to be about 2 weeks ahead in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And in fact, the last couple of years, I've noticed this, that if we don't get into hot temperatures right away, we'll have this nice long spring. And so we have frogs calling, birds arriving over a long period of time. And boy, this is a time to get out there and watch some of this behavior. Everything from kingfishers digging holes in banks for their nests. They may go back in those banks a meter or up to 3 meters back there, up to 10 feet back into a mud bank where their nest is at the end, to watch red-winged blackbirds display. And then gradually, as the females arrive, learn to build these hanging nests in the grasslands. It's an amazing time of year to watch birds display and to realize that this nesting behavior is critical. They have to have the habitat, of course, and then the nesting is the next thing to make sure that there are birds for the following, the next generation of birds is there, or reptiles, or mammals, or amphibians will be there for next year.
Well, Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And next month, we will find out all about what you learned and saw in Africa.
Exactly.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease, he joins us once a month to talk about Iowa's wild creatures and wild places, although next month we will be talking about wild creatures and wild places far away and why we in Iowa should care about those creatures. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.